you're listening to The Food Fix, a podcast where we talk with innovators who are figuring out how to better feed the world. I'm your host, Petulano Ali. In this episode, our guest is an engineer who is turning your poop into a resource. Decomposing human and animal waste has the power to change lives. I know it might sound and smell funny, but the power of poop lies in biogas, a renewable energy source produced during the breakdown of waste. The process yields a gas of about 60% methane that can be used for cooking, refrigeration, and other basic needs. That's not all. The waste itself can be processed and applied to fields to enrich the soil and improve crop production. And that's what waste engineer Rebecca Larson, assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, has been doing. She's partnered with Green Heat, a Ugandan energy company, on projects that demonstrate new ways to transform waste to resource. I spoke with her for The Food Fix. Rebecca, welcome to The Food Fix.
Thanks for having me.
So when I hear about you using waste, using it for cooking, the first thing that I would want to say is, wow, like, isn't waste supposed to be waste? Explain to me how you use waste to
cook. Well, I'm glad you didn't say gross. But no, we take waste, and that's the lovely thing about it. I think that's why I started working in waste, is because you take something that people might think of as a terrible thing, and then you can make it into something very useful. So we use microorganisms that are naturally occurring in waste, and they degrade the waste, and then we capture the emissions of methane that they release, and you can use that to cook. You can use that to make energy, you can use that to cool things, you can use it for a whole bunch of different end uses. So it's exciting. People don't believe it all the time at first, but after they see it, I think they're impressed and want to check it out. So it's great.
I still don't believe it, and right now I'm trying to believe it because I want to understand how this works.
Yeah, sure. Microorganisms, so they naturally degrade organic matter all the time, right? Think about a forest, think about soils, everywhere. Think about something decomposing on your counter, right? So they're always out there degrading these kinds of things. And there are certain microorganisms that are present in our guts and animals' guts that are excreted in manure. And so when we capture that manure, the conditions you use can promote certain of those microorganisms to be more active, right? So there's thousands of kinds of microorganisms that could be in there, but there's certain ones, which we call methanogens, that we want to be active because they break down organic matter, and as part of the respiration process, they produce methane. So we try to encourage those by providing the right environment that would cause those particular organisms to grow and to thrive. And that's what we call digester.
Wow, that's interesting. So I know that people would say, especially those who are in rural communities, they can help but think of how what they call waste they use to cook or to cool or to cultivate. How adaptive have they been in that respect?
I think digesters have been around for a very long time, so it's very old technology. I think they had been present in many of these countries for a long time. The tougher thing was not necessarily introducing the technology all the time. Occasionally, there are definitely people who don't know about it, but we make demonstration sites, they come and see them. The problem actually was that a lot of the previous systems didn't work very well. People had lots of problems, or people would come and help people build them, but then they would leave and the systems would fail. So actually one of our bigger hurdles was to try to overcome some of the difficulties of telling people why maybe some of those systems failed and how we were going to prevent that, or encouraging people who are having troubles with their systems to kind of improve upon the performance.
I mean, we'll come back to talk about how you encourage those people or what you found out, but of all things that you could do for farmers, for people, you decided to use waste. What was the inspiration?
I'm a waste engineer, so it was natural to my thing. But really, it's that, you know, the waste everybody thinks of as this negative component, right? And either you're having to deal with it, like handling it, or pushing it aside or finding a place to put it, right? And that's usually a burden on people to deal with. Or you're just releasing it to the environment and causing lots of problems, right? So you have this negative connotation with it, and then you have this ability to make it into something that people want, right? So not only might you meet some of their needs for cooking or cooling, if they're interested in that part, then they're naturally going to do the other part, which is to kind of manage their waste. So for me, it's like you're getting multiple positives out of one handling system, right? You're managing waste, and you're producing energy, and you're increasing food production, right? So you have this ability to touch and integrate into all of these areas with one simple thing, and it just provides a way to kind of connect all of these things and to provide benefits in many different directions. So when we started, we had issues of lack of production. We had issues of the stoves being the wrong designs. We had issues of education where people didn't really know how to operate them. We had issues of economics, right? So maybe the cost of implementing the systems, cooking itself may have not paid for the system to go in the first place, or the duration that it would take to pay it back would be much so long that the system wouldn't be viable anymore, right? So we had a lot of issues to deal with. A lot of our innovations and things that we've been working on were ways to improve those systems and add components to them to realize some of the benefits that we talked about. The way the systems had been operating and the failures that they incurred were meaning that all of those lovely things that we envisioned for these systems weren't actually happening. Now we're trying to target each component one at a time to try to improve in all of the areas so that we don't have these kind of limitations that we were hitting previously.
I might not understand the technicalities of those systems. When you talk about components, what components are you adding?
Right. The digester itself is a pretty basic system. You put waste into it. It's just like a sealed tank. So if you can think of like a rain barrel, maybe you've seen a barrel, or just any barrel in general, right? We kind of close it up and you feed waste into it and you can't let any oxygen in there. That's why we call them anaerobic digesters. And so then we collect the gas that's produced in that chamber. We would then run the gas up to a stove. And so that was kind of the conventional design that everybody implements. What we were finding, number one, is that maybe the gas wasn't enough to meet their needs. We had given everybody these stove designs that didn't really meet their demands, right? So like a school, for example, normally they would use these very large pots, right? And you would cook and you would serve all of the children, hundreds of kids at once, right? And so you would cook and feed them. And what was happening was we had given them these little stoves, or this is what the design that everybody was using. And these giant pots, number one, would barely fit on those stoves. And when they would run out of gas, they'd have to move boiling pots of water into their conventional stoves to finish the cooking. So it was dangerous, it was terrible, and obviously they stopped doing it. So a lot of times they just stopped using the biogas because it wasn't sufficient enough to get them through cooking. We designed something that we're calling a dual fuel stove, where it's designed for those large pots. You can use the biogas, but you can also supplement with wood if you don't have enough biogas to complete all your cooking. The other objective then is, well, let's just have enough biogas to finish their cooking. So in the meantime, we want this stove design so you can switch from fuel to fuel depending upon your needs. You know, as we move from there, we're looking at low-cost heating elements so that we could increase the activity of the microorganisms I was talking about before. So hopefully we can boost the biogas production to meet people's demands without significantly increasing the cost by making the systems so much bigger.
So how much biogas would you say you're producing now, one of those system produces?
So it depends upon the scale of your system. Normally, if I was here in the US and I had a digester and I was operating it and I was heating it, say imagine like a 5-gallon bucket and I filled it with waste, I should at least produce that 5-gallon bucket worth of gas each day. So if I had a 30 cubic meter system, I should produce 30 cubic meters of gas. What we found with the systems in Uganda is that they're at a much lower temperature, and so they're not producing that expected amount of gas. That's kind of like a baseline. Your system should ideally produce the volume of gas that you fill it with waste. And you can increase from there as you improve efficiencies. But we were finding our systems weren't coming close to meeting that expectation. So that's one of our goals of this year, is to improve the efficiency.
Do you work like in the whole of Uganda, or there's a specific part of Uganda where you work?
We go to different places. We mostly work in Kampala, but I just recently got brought to the very hot eastern side, where we met with some dairy farmers and some people in some villages. So,
I mean, this sounds like really very interesting. Do you have evidence of the success of the project so far?
Yeah, certainly. Just recently, we went to the eastern part of the country. There was a village and they decided they wanted to promote biogas. And so they selected a number of households and they did some innovative funding. In these particular villages, the people may not have had the money all up front to be able to purchase the system, but they were very interested in one of our new components to go with the digesters, which was a chilling system. A lot of them have dairies and were losing a lot of their milk to spoilage, or were doing things like having to travel at night to sell their milk, which isn't necessarily so safe, and also losing a lot of their power in that kind of economic arrangement because they were stuck with a very strict timeline, and the people buying the milk know that, right? Or, you know, they would talk about part of the structure of their environment is if their neighbors came to buy milk and it went bad, they had to replace that or pay them back, right? So they were talking about how that was costing them a lot. So in that area, you know, we got to see a number of biogas systems in that area that got put in. It was interesting to meet somebody the same age as me. So she was 35. She had 6 children. I have none. She seems very busy. She was a single mother. She lost her husband. So she moved back to raise her kids there on her own. And she was one of the sites they selected. She kind of talked about that prior to the biogas system, her kids and her went and collected wood. She said there were some issues with that. Number one, there's not always wood there. Number two, when it rained, the wood got wet. They had a lot of difficulty cooking. And that cooking took a long time, and so did gathering the fuel. So they put a biogas system in. They have cows, so they feed it their cow dung. They have an outhouse that also runs into the system. And then they take the gas, and one, she has a few small stoves that she uses at the site. And her biggest delight of the system, I think, was that she talked about converting from her firewood to the gas made it so that she could cook her meals much faster. You know, I didn't expect that. I didn't really think about that aspect of it. But she was kind of talking about, you don't know how much time I would spend cooking for my family. And she seemed to talk about making beans a lot and how beans took so long previously to cook. And so she was very happy to be able to cook the beans using the biogas cellar. She was delighted by that. And then she also had a chiller. So she uses an absorption chiller. So a heat, you take small amounts of biogas and burn it. It kind of looks like a Bunsen burner or just a small flame. And it runs through a system and then it runs through these kind of heating and cooling processes. And so you can actually use heat to cool. And I know that doesn't sound so intuitive, but she was running her fridge and she was very excited to be able to extend the time she could hold her milk and so that she would be able to make more money. Some of the other folks were even talking about being able to milk their cows more often, or one was talking about now that she had a chiller, they were buying milk from other people and actually were getting more buying power because they had a larger volume of milk that they could store there. So it was really interesting to see the way they were kind of putting these things together. The other thing that I found really interesting was my partner there was smart, and that he knows that people didn't have the money necessarily, as I mentioned, to buy all of this up front, right? And so what they did there was they provided some financing for them. And they also had the villagers or the people putting the systems in buy the materials, right? So that kind of reduced the cost for them. So they would buy the materials. The Green Heat that I work with provide the labor. And then slowly they would pay back as they saved money from these other components, as they made money, more money from their milk, and they are paying off the system over time. So that's been really great to see how they worked all that out, and I will give all of the credit to Green Heat and all of the people in the village for doing such a really wonderful job making all that work.
I mean, I would be tempted to think that you've achieved already too much in the project that you can stop, but there sure is a next step that you want to take. What's that step?
Right. So right now we're doing the heating. That's the biggest last thing that I've had an issue with, right? I, as an engineer who works on these systems, I don't like them being inefficient. I feel like it's wasting some of the potential. So I really want to see some of the places that these systems have gone in, that they're really meeting what they sold them as, right? So they said, here is what these can do. I want them to meet what people said they can do. Then beyond that, we'll just keep pushing the boundaries. We've got some new partners in Rwanda, so that's also been very exciting. They've been really good at education, the group in Rwanda, and some other waste management. So we had some of the Ugandans visit some of the sites in Rwanda, and now Rwanda came and visited some of the sites in Uganda. And that was really exciting for me because I think, I mean, just when you see them meet and they're they see something the other one is doing well and it is inspiring to them. And they go back and they make new plans and they ask questions. And sometimes I think something we do here that's a mistake is we think, I have an idea for you. Why don't you do this where you're at? But the places you're at, the context you're in, you can't use the same ideas everywhere, right? They have similar situations. They understand their, you know, all of the constraints they're under much better than anybody coming from like the US does, right? So their shared understanding of things leads to some really great ideas. So I think for us, the next steps are, okay, we have a base of what we think we know what we want to do. Now let's expand to these other regions. Let's include some more partners. This other partner, Rwanda, is also a young businessman and his brother who used to be an educator. So they've done a really lot of great things with classes. And so I'm hoping that, one, we now have most of the technical things and economic things worked out. Now I want to see all of the education and plans to make sure that all of this knowledge is spread across the region so that we can really see the impacts that we know we can achieve. So I'm excited for that.
I'm not in the field, but it seems like you're trying to stop me from being a journalist now and joining you to do what you're doing. But I'm sorry, I need to be here and tell your story.
Sure.
Rebecca Larson, she is assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she has developed and continues to evaluate a biogas refrigeration unit, a waste separation system that yields no-cost fertilizer, and a dual-fuel stove that cuts down on deforestation while easing cooking challenges at a local school in Kampala, Uganda. Thank you so much for talking to the Food Fix.
Thanks so much.
That's it for me, Petrolano Ali, on this episode of The Food Fix. Now we want to hear from you. Email us with your questions and comments at foodfixpodcast@gmail.com. The Food Fix is produced by the Translational Scholars Program at Michigan State University with funding from the Global Center for Food Systems Innovation, a development lab funded by USAID. Our theme music is the song Watching My Garden Grow by two of our favorite Michigan artists, Lindsay Liu and Josh Rilko. Thanks for listening and have a great day.